Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Americans on all sides of the big debate about this country's vast immigrant workforce can agree on one thing. The system is broken. Here's one more thing they can probably agree on. The stories about what went on in a meatpacking plant in Little Postville, Iowa, sound like something out of a dark industrial past from Upton Sinclair or Dickens. And when the authorities swooped in, it was prison for the workers, many of them, and so far mainly a pass for the company. This hour On Point, the Postville raid and what it tells us about immigrant labor and the rough justice of a broken immigration system. Joining me first today is Julia Preston. She's national immigration reporter for the New York Times. She's in New York and just back from Postville, Iowa. Julia, welcome back. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for inviting me.
Also with us from Decorah, Iowa, the main town next to Postville, is Pastor David Vasquez Levy. He's campus pastor at Luther College in Decorah. But for the last 5 years, he's ministered to migrant workers at the agro-processors plant in Postville, and since the raid, has been working with the clergy at St. Bridget's, the Catholic Church in Postville, to help the families of the workers now in jail. David Vasquez Levy, Pastor Vasquez, thanks for being with us.
It's good to be with you. Thank you.
Let's get a little sound of what's going on out there. Here's an excerpt from CNN. Maria Cruz, a mother and former worker at the agro-processors plant, her husband is now in jail. She's been sent home with a tracking device on her ankle to look after her three children. Meanwhile, of course, there's no income in the Cruz household.
They took my husband and left me with my three sons, and I can't work. It makes you feel humiliated, and we didn't do anything bad. All we did was come here to work.
And here's Paul Outerkirk, retired priest at St. Bridget's in Postville, who for years heard from his parishioners about the conditions on the agro-processor factory floor and who had to help injured workers find doctors for treatment.
We're dealing with them. We've seen the kid without the three fingers and the one with his hand missing. And when I was a pastor here, I took how many people to the doctor because of cuts?
There it is, and much more. Julia, you were there over the weekend. Big protests. What exactly were the signs saying on Sunday, Julia?
Well, they were mainly focused on trying to call for an end to the raids and also a broader call for immigration reform. And also there was an interesting group of Jewish rabbis who were there appealing for changes to the standards for kosher food. It was actually a very big crowd. There were about 1,000 people there, and the town is only about 2,200, so
wow.
It was quite a turnout.
And on the other side, some anti-immigrant demonstrators, one with a sign I'm reading here from AP reporting, "What would Jesus do? Obey the law," as in don't work illegally in this country.
Yes, and at a certain point, there was quite a confrontation on the street. It never came to anything disorderly, but on one side of the street, you had the immigrants walking past with their signs and yelling slogans, and on the other side of the street, you had a much smaller group of people from Federation for American Immigration Reform, which is a group that is opposed to benefits for illegal immigrants. And they were saying, illegals go home. So it was quite a day for this main street in this quite small town in Iowa.
Pastor David Vasquez Levy in Decorah, Iowa, you know this town well. It's just right next door. You're the town where people come to shop, I guess. This must have been a real bombshell. I mean, something like one in three residents of Postville were immigrants, many working at this plant.
Yes, and one in every five was detained in the raid, and so that has affected the majority of the town, everything from Main Street to the schools and the churches.
Julia, take us back to what happened on May 12th, why this plant was a target. Paint the picture for us a little bit of the town, the plant. I mean, all these the biggest single-site immigration raid in American history, the biggest kosher meatpacking plant in the country, in a region with many meatpacking plants of all kinds. And here, a raid that was on a scale and with an outcome that was maybe like nothing we've seen before.
Well, mainly what made this raid quite different was that law enforcement approached these immigrant workers with criminal charges, and the operation was conducted as though it were a criminal raid, in the sense that the authorities came in with a Black Hawk helicopter overhead. Immigration agents were dressed in black riot gear, and they went into the plant, and they apprehended 389 workers in one day. But the other thing that was quite exceptional about this process was what came next, which was they were immediately taken to federal court, and the court authorities in Iowa set up a special courthouse in a ballroom in the National Cattle Congress in Waterloo, Iowa. And then the almost 300 of these immigrants were put through federal proceedings in which they were faced with quite tough criminal charges of identity theft and document fraud. And they were prosecuted in essentially a week's time, which is a record for federal proceedings, certainly in Iowa and perhaps in the United States.
And not just deported, as has typically been the case, but also with these criminal charges, document and fraud charges, many sent off to prison for months before they will ultimately be deported.
Yes, that was what was quite different about this, was that, you know, in the past, we've had very large raids. There were raids in December of 2006 at six Swift and Company meatpacking plants in which large numbers of immigrants were also detained. But in those cases, the numbers of immigrants that actually faced these criminal charges were quite small, and relative to the overall arrests, and the rest of the immigrants were prosecuted, or they were handled with immigration charges through immigration court. And this is, I think, something that people in the United States don't understand well, which is that immigration proceedings are, in general, civil proceedings. They're administrative proceedings, and they're handled in by different agents and in different courts and then the federal criminal process. And so what was really quite hard, I think, on the immigrants in this case was that they were not deported right away, but instead they were offered plea agreements in which they agreed that they had committed a lesser form of document fraud, and in almost all of the cases completely waived their immigration rights. And then they were sentenced to, in most cases, 5.5 months in federal prison. And they're still serving those times. And, of course, they're not in Iowa. They're in Kansas and Oklahoma, and they've been sent around the country to serve their federal prison time, which is another very difficult thing for their families.
All over the place. We'll talk with a certified interpreter who was there when all that went on. Americans may be divided on how illegal immigrant workers should be treated in a case like this, but it's hard to be divided about the working conditions inside the plant that have emerged, some before all this happened and much more since it happened. Julia, give us a sense of what was going on inside this meatpacking plant.
Well, I began to sense that this plant was quite different from other meatpacking plants that I've reported on right away after the raid. I met these young immigrants whom I wrote about in my story on Sunday, just in the days after the raid. In fact, at St. Bridget's Church, Pastor Vasquez was there. And it was clear just from looking at them that they were not old enough to be working in a meatpacking plant. In Iowa, the law is quite clear that this type of work is so dangerous that you are not allowed as a company to hire a worker under 18 years old to work anywhere on the floor of a meatpacking plant. There are knives. It involves fast-moving assembly lines. The slaughterhouse is a place where there's tremendous danger. There's danger from moving carcasses, from knives.
And you're reporting people working very, very long hours, underaged people, not being paid right, different kinds of coercion. And then these kind of unbelievable stories that have come out through what I guess some undercover work that had gone on, affidavits filed in that regard about What, immigrant workers with their eye, one with eyes duct taped shut, being beaten with a meat hook and all kinds of rough stuff in here?
Yes. The young workers who I interviewed actually didn't. They at first described this as though this was kind of routine. They were put to work at night, and in many cases they were working a day shift and then a night shift. There were very basic things that weren't done. They had tremendous difficulty collecting all of their overtime pay. In many cases, they had no training at all. They were shifted from one job to another that involved packing or using a saw without any form of training, and there were repeated reports of accidents. This was clearly not up to standard, what was going on in this plant.
And, I mean, just on and on. The way, as you say, the way the pay was handled, the kind of coercion, work these long hours or you may lose your job or you may be exposed for your immigration status. People, you quote one very young man saying, "I felt like I was a slave."
Yes, and as you mentioned, one of the striking things also was that some of this information started to come out in the affidavit that the authorities presented in when they went for the search warrant to conduct the original raid. So some of this information, the information, for example, about the beating with the meat hook, did not come from the immigrants, but from an undercover informant who was planted, who was placed in the plant.
Julia, we'll look at that story. And Pastor David Vasquez-Levy, please stand by. We're looking at the biggest immigration raid and its aftermath in American history in Postville, Iowa. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the biggest immigration raid in American history in tiny Postville, Iowa, and what it revealed about terrible labor conditions and the rough justice of American immigration enforcement. A little bit of sound there from protests on Sunday in Postville, Iowa. Tiny town, big protests and big issues on the table as a result of everything that's tumbled out here. We've been joined by Julia Preston. She's national immigration reporter for the New York Times, has spent a lot of time in Postville, just back from there, joining us from New York. From Decorah, Iowa, next town over, Pastor David Vasquez-Levy is with us, campus pastor at Luther College. He's also spent a lot of time dealing with immigrant workers in Postville. Julia, just so we have this sort of tangibly in mind, tell us a little bit about the story of Elmer L. You didn't give his whole name. You began to describe him, this kid who was 16 when he started working, 17-hour shifts, 6 days a week. Here's the one who felt like a slave. And there was an incident. One day he was clearing cow innards off the slaughterhouse floor. This is last August. What happened?
He said that one of the supervisors, who he described as a rabbi, kicked him from behind, and it caused one of the knives he was using to fly out of his scabbard and cut his elbow. And he was taken to a hospital nearby. The injury took 8 stitches to repair, and he went back to the plant, hoped to at least get the day off because his elbow was stinging, quite sore, as he described it. And then he was put back to work immediately. And the following day, he said that he was lifting a cow's tongue, a heavy cow's tongue, and the stitches ruptured and the wound opened again. He was not allowed to leave the plant at that point. The injury was bandaged, and then he was put back to work again.
Pastor Vasquez, is this representative of the kinds of stories you've heard in your years dealing with workers at the agroprocessors plant?
Unfortunately, they are, both in terms of stories coming from children, sexual abuse of women. One child I spoke with, has spoken repeatedly about accidents, that people having, no training in their conditions to work, fear about being in the place and a constant pressure. They would work such long hours that both by their age and experience and the lack of communication because, a lot of the orders and supervision was done in English and a lot of these folks didn't understand what they were being told. There were no signage around the plant. And so this is repeatedly what people have shared about their experience within the plant, both in settings of conversations prior to the raid and then certainly since the raid as people have had a little bit more comfort about speaking out. part of the issue in this is that most of the people affected in this raid have been afraid to speak, both by their historical background coming from Guatemala. I'm originally from Guatemala as well, a place where people have been very afraid to speak, and silence is the primary power of the powerful.
Julia, sexual abuse, what's that about? Is that an issue here?
It is. Apparently, there have been reports about that, and I understand that the Equal Opportunity, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is looking into this. I'm not sure where that stands. It's an ongoing investigation.
Let's take a call from Independence, Iowa, just 40 miles up the road from Postville, maybe. John is on the line. Hi, John. What do you know?
Hello. We got kind of a bad connection here. But anyway, I work at a correctional facility in Waterloo, and I'm kind of a law and order guy.
Yep.
So I believe we should, you know, enforce the laws we have. If we need workers in this country, we should, you know, make some laws that would make it easier for people to come to work here.
And what about the big arrest? Do you think that's the right thing? Do the meatpacking plants really need immigrants from Guatemala to do their work and serve the country? This is a huge plant. Are there enough Americans to staff it?
Packing plants. I don't know whether the packing plants need the laborers or not. I think that, you know, keeps the labor costs low when they can hire immigrants or illegal people, undocumented people, where they have no recourse if they're mistreated by their employer. I think we need to go, you know, these businesses are hiring people. I think we need to do something about that illegally. I think we need to go after the employers. Also, the cleanliness in this plant. I had people in this facility where I work, I had a number of my people go to work there through temporary agencies after this raid. And these people, their cleanliness standards not the greatest in the world, and all they did is complain about how dirty that plant was.
Well, John, thanks for your call. Let's get one more right here from Des Moines, Iowa. We've got another John. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm very concerned about this whole issue, and this is a typical example of divide and conquer.
What do you mean?
As far as unions and why people are afraid to join unions. And this is the closest thing to slavery we've had since slavery.
So what should happen? What should happen then, John? Get immigrants out of the country so they're not exploited, illegal immigrants, or something else?
I have no problem with people trying to better their lives. And if I'd have been born in Mexico, I'd have darn well been trying to get across that border. I want to see these CEOs do some time. That's what I want to see. This short-sighted look at this of the workers, and somehow they're the enemy. They're not the enemy. It's the business community, the culture of the business community. You know, this smuggling is big business.
Yeah, John, let us look at that issue right here, and in particular with this plant, Julia. I think it's a family-owned business, agroprocessors. Have there been any charges against supervisors or owners in this case?
There have so far been criminal charges have been brought against two supervisors, floor supervisors, who have been arrested on immigration harboring charges, and a third supervisor has also faced charges and is currently a fugitive. I think, though, that we do have to note that there is a grand jury sitting in Iowa that's hearing evidence in this case, and the federal immigration and justice authorities are investigating. There is a state and federal labor investigation underway, and so I do think it's premature to say at this point that no charges are going to be brought. There are obviously investigations underway, and we need to wait and see what the outcome is.
Pastor Vasquez, I'm reading here fresh stories about Somalis who have been brought in to work in the plant. Since the Guatemalans and Mexicans, many of them have been picked up in the raid, and then a lot of these Somalis quitting already and saying they don't want to work there, they weren't being paid right, etc. Are you hopeful, Pastor, that this will be cleaned up?
You know, it's very difficult right now to sit here and see a town. You know, there's not a lot of the rural communities people know in around the United States see their communities struggle. And Postville was a place that was growing, and the recipe for it was to be the hometown to the world, as they labeled themselves, a place where people came and lived and established themselves as families and communities. What's happened now is that you have a much more transitional group of people coming in, and that the story that you're mentioning about Somalis who are coming in, they join others who have come and gone from the town since the period of the raid. In the last 2 months, entire companies, labor force companies, have pulled out their entire labor force because of the conditions in the plant. I spoke with three gentlemen who were coming from Texas and were experienced in meatpacking as they were on their way out of town, and they just basically, they worked there for 3 days, and even though they have a lifetime of work in meatpacking, said, we can't do this, and we have to go. Mm. Part of the issue is, you know, you have now a community that was established and had families now living with a constant shift of people coming and going, many of whom bring their own social issues as well, mm-hmm. that they are seeking and to resolve personally, and have no resources to do so in this very small community that is both grieving and trying to attend to the impact of a very violent raid in their town.
Very hard times. Pastor David Vasquez Levy in Decorah, Iowa, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I want to bring into our conversation right now from Miami, Florida, Eric Kamayid Freixas. He's a federally certified court interpreter who worked helping interpret for those picked up in the big raid on May 12th. When he was all finished with it, he really couldn't stand what he had seen. Wrote it up in an essay, some of it published in the New York Times. He's a professor of modern languages at Florida International University. Eric Kamayid Freixas, thank you very much for joining us.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
What was it that you witnessed that upset you so much? You've been working in this field for a long time. You've seen a lot of immigration cases dealt with. What got under your skin in this instance?
Well, I normally work on criminal cases, and this is the first time in 23 years of practice where I have seen immigration matters and criminal matters brought together under the same court proceedings.
Normally it would be handled strictly as an immigration issue in this case, but here there were criminal charges and deportation proceedings. And what did it look like?
Well, it was referred to as a fast-tracking operation, which is also something that I had never seen. And as a result, constitutional rights were being denied because what happened was that this unprecedented move to charge illegal workers criminally brought a situation where, for example, they did not have the Sixth Amendment right to reasonable bail because there was an immigration detainer against them.
Paint the picture of what you saw, though, for us. You call it the saddest scene you've ever witnessed. What did it look like at the Cattle Congress?
Well, they were bringing the defendants in 10 at a time in a row, and they were shackled. The chains were dragging, and they were basically sitting them and arraigning them 10 at a time. Each had an individual case number, so supposedly they were individual cases, but they were brought in together. Now, some of them looked to be very much in distress, particularly the last three groups that they brought were women, shackled in the same manner. Many of them were in emotional distress, were unable to reach their faces, to wipe their faces or cover their faces because their wrists were shackled to their waist. Mm. So it just created a very bad impression. Of course, TV cameras were not allowed past the perimeter of the compound. So this is something that the press was not able to document.
You say a line was crossed at Postville. I mean, something clearly, it broke something in your heart that day.
Well, several things. I see it as a major assault on democracy. I was not really speaking for the migrants. That's an indirect result. I was really speaking for due process, for constitutional rights, and for democracy. Basically, this scheme of bringing together the immigration code and the criminal code against defendants in order to deny constitutional rights is an old ploy, an old legal ploy that we've seen applied in totalitarian countries. I think it's appalling that something like that should happen in our courts. The federal courts have never been a party to this type of operation. I think it's important to note that my role as an interpreter is that of the court's expert witness. That means I'm an expert witness for the judge and for the judge only. Now, in this case, there were different judges at each stage of the process, and there wasn't a continuity of judicial overview over the entire process. Only the interpreters were able to see every step of the way. So I was in an obligation, according to my duties, to report to the court what I had seen were the results of the this judicial experiment.
Immigration
and that's
proceedings.
Exactly what I did.
Yeah, and immigration proceedings and criminal proceedings together. And you say these people are left very vulnerable with no protections, even though they face prison. Let's take a call from Gina in Lexington, Massachusetts. Gina, you're on the air.
Hi. This is a bit of a tangential issue, perhaps, but I did want to share the fact that although we keep a kosher home, we actually make a point of not buying kosher meat from the company that produces out there because of what we know about the way they treat their workers and, additionally, the animals.
Gina, is it just since May 12th that you've stopped buying, what, Aaron's Best, Aaron's Choice?
We heard, we were over at some friends before that, earlier this year, and talking about different kosher products, and they said, oh, we never buy from them. At the time, I had only heard about the way they treat the animals. Because we believe that keeping kosher shouldn't only be about the ritual slaughter of the animals, but also that in a way how you're buying and how you're consuming elevates the way you're operating in the world.
There's a whole ethical envelope here. Gina, let us look at that also with Rachel in Iowa City, Iowa. Rachel, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I want to remind everybody that the folks at AgriProcessors, they're not representative of the Jewish community as a whole. Judaism is a religion that's very concerned with social justice issues, and they're really an embarrassment to the Jewish community.
And a big one. I mean, this is the biggest kosher meatpacking processor in the country.
Yeah, and you know, they're really not representative of Jews as a whole. So, you know, I just want to remind everybody that, you know, don't judge Jews based on kind of these folks who really are just really not ethical people.
Rachel, we've got it. There's another flag for social justice. Julia Preston, has religion been an issue in this, in Postville itself, or is it just business?
Well, there is a longstanding social process that's gone on in Postville, which actually has been the subject of a book called Postville, about the arrival of this Orthodox Jewish family and their and the various rabbis and their families who work in the plant. And it is a complex process. Following the dietary laws and the laws of ritual slaughter for a kosher plant is a very complex process. And I think that the Rubashkins have been focused on that aspect of it.
We'll come back and look at that more, Julia. We've got to take a short break here. I apologize. But we'll be right back with more on the situation in Postville, Iowa. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the biggest immigration raid in American history in tiny Postville, Iowa, and what it revealed about really bad labor conditions and the rough justice of immigration enforcement in this country sometimes. Julia Preston has been with us from the New York Times. She spent a lot of time in Postville, just back from there. She's national immigration reporter there. We've been joined from Miami, Florida by Eric Kamayid Freixas. He is a certified court interpreter who saw everything that went down in the aftermath of this big raid and just couldn't take it. He's written publicly about how a line was crossed there. We're joined right now from Washington by Mark Lauritsen, International Vice President and Director of the Food Processing and Packing Division of the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, representing 250,000 meat packers around the country, grocery store workers, and others. Mark Lauritsen, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Do we need this kind of labor and this kind of working conditions to be fed in this country?
Well, you know what we need? I listened with interest to your exchange with a caller from Des Moines, and the question was asked, you know, what needs to happen here? Well, you know, I think part of the problems can be solved if the U.S. government would enforce their labor laws as vigorously as they enforce their immigration laws. The exploitation of workers has taken place at this plant in Postville largely because employers in this country get a free pass when it comes to labor law violations. And as you can see by looking at what happened here, children as young as 13 years old working in that plant, workers getting beaten with a meat hook. If we enforce the labor laws and we take that ability to exploit workers out, it wouldn't matter if these workers came from wherever. The need to exploit or the ability to exploit would be taken away because there would be vigorous enforcement of labor laws. You know, if a person or a group of workers was to file a complaint under the National Labor Relations Act right now, it would take years and years and years before justice came out.
Julie Preston, what about that? I was reading somewhere that reports of trouble here were out, you know, a long time before this raid, and not the least of it in some Jewish papers themselves, the Forward, maybe others, saying there's a problem here. Why wasn't there more adequate labor law enforcement here over this time, Julia?
Well, for example, the authorities, the labor authorities in Iowa, did bring violation citations against the plant as recently as earlier this year, but the fines were negotiated down, and it becomes an insignificant punishment for the plant. And also, part of the problem, again, has to do with the silence that is imposed on workers when they are undocumented, when they're illegal immigrants, and they're working in a very oppressive environment like this. It really makes it very difficult for them to come forward and speak. And one of the points that the labor officials in Iowa made was that perhaps one of the unintended consequences of the raid was that now that these workers are facing certain deportation, they now feel free to speak about the conditions in the plant. But it's not just the labor conditions. To give you an idea of the basic dynamic of this plant and why this is a different situation from many meatpacking plants. Swift plant in Marshalltown, Iowa, which is not far away.
Okay.
The starting wage was $13.25 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And in this plant, some of the workers were starting at $6.25 an hour.
Is that even minimum wage?
I think it was just above minimum wage.
Mark Lauritsen, if you were to make, I mean, we hear the story, Julia reports the one of some young guy, eyes duct taped shut, beaten with a meat hook. If we've heard about child labor, we've heard, I don't know what to think about the wages. If you were to look at labor law violations here, have you investigated? What would you point to?
I would start by pointing to the fear that takes place in that facility. The agriprocessors has perfected the fear to where a worker, picture this, in the year 2008, a worker has his eyes duct taped shut and he's beaten with a meat hook and he's afraid to come forward. You know, one of our callers and had said that you know, this is next to slavery. Well, that is next to slavery.
What do they have over that worker that would keep him or her from going public?
what they have over the workers is just fear. You know, fear that working people in this country need their jobs. They need their jobs. They need to, you know, working people got in the bad habit of eating, and so they need money to eat. They need money to survive, and you know, people need their jobs. So they take the ability to exploit workers, and they put that fear into them. So they're afraid to come forward. But this doesn't happen in the slaughterhouse industry. This happens at agriprocessors in Postville, Iowa. You know, in the plants that we represent, you wouldn't hear of a worker being having their eyes duct taped shut and beaten with a meat hook. And if we had any indication that there was child labor going on in the union meatpacking plant, it would be stopped and stopped immediately. This employer, agriprocessors, is a poster child for how a company exploits the broken immigration system and uses it to drive conditions down for its workers. If there was a spot, or if there was a hall of fame for rogue employers in the meatpacking industry, there'd be a special place for this company, because they've absolutely perfected it, and it's not like they don't care. They won't take responsibility for their own actions of what's taken place there. And if you listen to what they say in the media, it's like, just now we're hearing stories about the Somalians that they're recruiting to come and work there, and how the Somalians are leaving because they were fed, you know, lies about if you come here to work, you'll get all this, you'll get relocation money, you'll get a starting wage at this level. And they're leaving. And as they're leaving, then you hear the stories again. But when they talk to agriprocessors about it, agriprocessor says, well, you'll have to talk to the recruiting company. It's not our responsibility. You know, then they put up this false image of hiring a compliance officer. We're gonna be in compliance with all the labor laws and all the laws, the environmental laws. It's a sham that they're saying that they're going to comply when they don't. This company, if it's an environmental law, if it's a labor law, it's almost like they haven't seen a law that they don't enjoy violating.
Let's get a call here from Charlotte, North Carolina. Frank, you're on the air. Hello, Frank. Are you there, my friend?
Yes, I am.
Hi. What do you know, Frank?
Okay, am I there?
Yes, you are.
Okay. So anyways, I have some friends that came over from Mexico, and the way that they got over here, someone from the United States, from a chicken company, went over there, gave them an airline ticket to fly over here, gave them a place to stay at where they could actually live and be paid minimum or less wages to work over here. And this is what this is all about. The Republicans have been in charge, and half of the immigrants that have came over from Mexico came over during their watch, and they're saying that they're watching the border. They're not watching the border. They're letting people come over here illegally, and they know it. All they have to do is go next door to their neighbor's house, and I bet you that they live in their neighborhood, knock on their door, and tell them to stop hiring illegal aliens and bringing them over here.
And you're saying companies are complicit in the stories your friends are telling you. Frank, thanks for your call. Let's get another from Davenport, Iowa. Matt, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for bringing forward this really important topic. There are a lot of issues, but I wanted to address the concern I have for the judicial processes' integrity being compromised in what happened in the aftermath of the raid. What we saw was a total lack of due process. First of all, we start out with the questionable violation of separation of powers, just reflected in the way the courts and the prosecutors coordinated setting up this production line. The courts agreeing to process individual cases 10 by 10.
This is what we heard described with Eric Kamayad Freixas, who's with us. Them coming in shackled in tears.
He was an eyewitness to a real violation of due process. These fellows were charged, and women were charged with overcharged or threatened with overcharged criminal cases. The court and the attorneys had packaged up plea deals. Attorneys were rounded up with no experience in immigration law. They were handed these people, not really their cases, because they didn't have time to investigate, do discovery, any of those things a lawyer would do. They didn't have adequate language ability or assistance, and they were told, take it or leave it, and if you leave it, you're going to face serious probably prosecution and be in prison for extended period of time.
For years.
What the courts did and the attorneys did, they just produced a product like a meat plant would that looked like sausage. You threw in all these ingredients, and here's a product that doesn't matter where the integrity of our process is violated. And I think we just have to call everybody to account here, from the judges on down, and we need a wholesale evaluation and a reexamination of what we're willing to do in these kinds of cases.
Matt, you're an Iowa attorney. How do you feel this going down in Iowa? What are people saying about this? I mean, you had prosecutors from your own backyard who were working on this and judges. What's the Iowa attitude toward what happened in Postville that you detect?
Well, there is a real concern. I haven't seen such wide-scale concern about an issue, and it cuts across religious lines, it cuts across professional lines. You know, there's. I'm really concerned about my brother lawyers, sister lawyers too, who got swept up in this, because I think a lot of ethical issues have arisen as a result of the failure to have competent counsel provide adequate defense in a constitutional sense for fellow human beings who are swept up into a gargantuan legal process.
Matt, you put it very pointedly. Eric, this is what you saw. Matt's an attorney, and he says this just doesn't cut it. I think he's with you. A line was crossed here. Do you see any evidence of pushing that line back, Eric?
Well, first, let me point out that I saw defense attorneys battle valiantly, and their hands were just tied. There was nothing anybody could do, not even the judges at sentencing could do anything about it. As soon as the process was set in motion, it was deterministic. It was a done deal. So there was no presumption of innocence from the beginning. Also, I want to point out that our judges didn't know that this was going to turn out this way. I'm sure that if they had known, they would have never allowed it. Basically, the court was moving forward on this under very different implied warranties, things turned out a way that was unexpected by them, and they were not there to see the minutia of the end results.
So off they went. Yes, Julia Preston, please.
I just wanted to come a little bit also to the defense of the criminal defense lawyers who were summoned by the court in this case. Their job is to determine, based on the charges that they are seeing from the prosecutor, what is the best interest of their clients. And in this case, you had an additional factor, which is that these immigrants did not attempt to argue that they were not illegal immigrants. They just wanted to go home. They were workers, and their entire purpose was to be working to make money for their families. And so their focus was to figure out in this terrible vise that the prosecutor put them in, what was the quickest way to get home? And so the defense lawyers basically didn't have a good option to give them, because this process was fast-tracked and went so quickly, and because the end point was an immigration charge where they were going to be deported anyway. The immigrants were in a situation where, in effect, they were begging to forego their constitutional rights.
So what was the dynamic, Julia? I mean, we should say the prosecutors are saying, look, there was identity theft here. To get documents, to get into that plant, to get these jobs, there were identities stolen to permit them to do that. And so, of course, criminal charges are justified. I think that's the message, Julia.
Well, in the past, though, these kinds of raids have been handled entirely or almost entirely as immigration charges. And the effect of that is that it's not great for the immigrants, but they do get deported. And it's also an issue for the taxpayers, because this is almost 300 immigrants who are now serving time in federal prison. And it's a question that, for example, that Congressman Braley from Iowa has raised as to whether that is a prudent use of the taxpayers' money.
Let's get another call or two from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Joan, you're on the air.
I just my whole sense of hearing these various comments is that I want to say, wake up, America, how hypocritical we are. These people are human beings. They've come only to be able to provide food for their children and a roof over their heads. And they're being abused, because somehow in our system it's allowed this money-driven mentality on the business level to kind of go under the table. And the jobs that are being shipped out of the United States are probably using these same tactics because they're able to do that. you know, in America, we go to church on Sundays, and we talk about how we believe in a religious mentality, and that we want to do unto others as we would have them do unto us, et cetera, et cetera. But for God's sakes, if these people would be pictured, the stories that have been told, would America continue to turn its head and gosh almighty, it's just frightening to me.
Joan, we hear it loud and clear, and many other callers have as well who we just couldn't get on. Mark Lauritsen, you've said, number one, enforce labor laws. What else? As a union man, what do you say about this picture? What's the answer? We've got half a minute here.
I think the not only speaking as a union man, but speaking from somebody that worked in a slaughterhouse and grew up his 32 years of his life in Iowa. The answer here is that working people in this country need to understand that it's the employers that are gaming this system, this broken immigration system. The workers in that plant are not the enemy. If there was an enemy, it's those that are violating the spirit of the law and by going out and exploiting workers. Vigorously enforce the labor laws. Allow workers to have representation. Allow workers to have a safe workplace. Allow workers to have a voice on the job. That's how life changed after Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle, that workers were able to join unions and join them in mass and protect themselves and protect their fellow workers and build a better life.
Upton Sinclair in The Jungle, 1906. Here we are in 2008 having the conversation again. Time to get it fixed, or fixed again, I would say. Mark Lauritsen with the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, representing 250,000 meatpackers around the country. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Eric Kamaid-Frekshas, thank you so much for speaking up, and thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
And Julia Preston with the New York Times, thank you always for your reporting, Julia. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.